Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hello, you two.
That's kind of past its sell-by date.
I was going to say, are we just going to keep playing that as a way of kind of provoking other people into sending us one? Otherwise, we're still going to be doing Christmas songs in June.
Well, I reckon if we keep playing that, it'll become our default signature tune, and then we'll never get another dum-de-dum. But I reckon, though, we need you, Mr. Man with the Golden Sax, to send us in another dum-de-dum, but without the jingly bells, because we should always have that as backup, I reckon. It's rather good.
Yeah.
Do like it. Folks, this is Dum-de-Dum, the show about the reality ducky drama that are centred at Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the spare tagine that is Royfield Brown, and with me the vibrant saucepan that is...
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Jenny Darling's kitchen equipment, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dum-de-Dum, well, you know what it is. It's an excellent one we've been playing for about the last month. Now, Lucy, if any of our other caller-inners would like to dum-de-dum in, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a dum-de-dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and for doing the Dumpty Dogs, Shambridge for her brilliant voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and to Derek for the loan of the back bedroom. Derek's having his flu jab today. He's moaning about having to drop his trousers for a small prick, but Auntie Cardboard says it's about time he suffered too.
Oh, that would probably make me chuckle this week. Well done, you. I can tell you're in a new environment there, Freeman. It sounds all different. How's the mood been?
Well, you know when you start off and you're all dead organised and you put, I mean, you know, because you had packers, didn't you? And we had packers. And but then there's always the bits, they go, there's that weird time where you're homeless because they've gone with your stuff in it and it hasn't completed. So other people own your house, but you don't own your new house yet. So you're sort of technically homeless with the cat in a box. Yeah, and then we had to fill up the car with all these sort of odds and sods. And then we arrived at the new house, opened the door of the car. What was it? Oh, a bath towel and one shoe fell out of the car. And I just thought, yes, it's so much for my, this time I'm going to be really, really organized. Didn't really happen. But anyway, we're in, and it's fine.
Awesome. Well, maybe we'll have some more moving in chat as we continue with this week's show. In between, we hear views from Master Miles, Red Agnes, Monty, Claire, Glynn, Quilted Bunny, and Witherspoon. But first, before the caller inners, it's our Lucy and a week in Ambridge.
This week in Ambridge was sponsored by Bella and Patsy. Who are they? No one knows, no one cares. We finally got shot of Lily, Elizabeth pretended to be better just to get rid of her and Russ and his three-speed kettle. I'm fine, darling. Look, I've got my trousers on over my pyjamas this time. Off you go back to Manchester. Off you go. Russ, quick. Quick, put the child locks on. She's getting out. Go, go, go. Jenny, darling, is still grieving for her white wine fridge and her butler's sink. Oh, Brian, it's just not the same having to wash in a bucket under the outside tap with Kirsty looking at me through the window and singing We Shall Overcome. Brian and Alki decided to hold a party for Jenny Darling to remind her how old she is and how she now lives in a really small house that can't fit anyone in. There was only room for three guests at once, so there was a sort of rota system while the other guests queued up in the front garden. Justin handed round some rather good cigars to the men and some embroidery kits to the ladies in the queue, but then Kirsty Corbin opened the window and started reading to them from her book about the Jarrow Marches. Alki was having a whale of a time, being all wildly indiscreet and discussing Lexi's menstrual cycle with Justin, who was eating bruschetta at the time, which was rather off-putting. She was then forcibly removed by Chris, who tried to herd her home until she broke away from him and climbed a tree again. Anyway, it did the trick, and Jenny Darling decided that bricks and mortar didn't matter, but what really counted was family and friends, except the alcoholics, the philanderers, and the juvenile delinquents, which leaves Debbie. Hello, Adam? Hello? Can you hear me, Adam? Things hotted up for Helen and Lee. Well, they went to a low simmer, and then the pilot light blew out. Helen demanded an urgent summit meeting with Kirsty. I kissed him, then he kissed me back. And me front, she said. Bastard, said Kirsty. Hit him with sticks at once. Excuse me, I must just go and shout at Brian again. I've just heard him sneeze and it is 7:40. Helen, with her usual crystal clear communication style, said to Lee, I do not want to see you anymore, and then arranged to meet him 2 minutes later. In fact, she sees him now more after she dumped him than before, which Lee described as confusing, but then he reads Dan Brown, so I'd imagine he finds stairs tricky. It's been a...
You snob.
It's been a whole week since Bridge Farm got revamped, so we were well overdue Tom getting a new good idea. It turned out not to be a good idea, but it was new. It is the Bridge Farm Veg app, which is going to be called iLeak. How it works is you sort through the Bridge Farm vegetable selection. It doesn't take long, it's only carrots. So you decide you want a carrot, and the app will tell you if there are any carrots available in your area. You have to specify what length of carrot you want, whether you want just one carrot, or you are willing to experiment with two carrots, what your previous experience with carrots has been, and what kind of thing you are thinking of doing with it. And then Tom finds you a suitable carrot, and if the carrot's up for it, he brings it round. It's simple, really, but as I say, it's quite time-consuming. Shula is packing up her not-going-out karate belt. If I wanted to have a strange man leap about and shout incomprehensible things at me, I'd have stayed married to Alistair, she said. Horse paintings! Philip and Krusty went out for lunch and tried to work out a way Alistair could raise money for poorly children by running about. Alistair, you've got loads of money. Just give it to the poorly children. They don't care whether you run about or not. Philip and Krusty are a bit of a joyless couple, I have to say. Like Dylan Thomas and Emmeline Pankhurst on a date. Would you like a sandwich, Krusty? A sandwich that has been produced from the sweat of female kitchen labour? No, Wayne made it. Oh yes, Wayne, who tore the heart out of Beverly Drains. The best news of the week was that Brian has got his court date. Like most of Brian's dates, it will take place in a wood-panelled room. It'll all be rather formal. At least one person there will be wearing a wig, and it'll probably end up with Brian going down with a stiff one. The end!
Oh, you know what, Luce? That was so much funnier than last week, I tell you. I do some proper gags in it this week. Well done, missus. I really enjoyed that. Now, starting with that Brian stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, how do you paint these pictures, Lucy? You have such an imaginative mind. Anyway, now, right, Russ going back to Manchester with our Lily. Did we actually see that coming? I didn't think Lily was going to go back.
No, she really sounded reluctant, didn't she?
Mm.
Yeah, she really did.
She did not want to go. And where is Elizabeth and her breakdown? How low is she going to get before somebody really realises that, you know, she's got a big problem?
Well, she's now doing that. I just have to warn you of something, listeners.
Mm-hmm.
My son has invited two school friends back. and they are currently staring at me in the studio and putting their shoes on, which I think means they're all going to come galloping up here. I can't really stop them because they're miles away down the garden. But if you hear a funny noise in a minute, it's three very nosy schoolboys coming to see what I'm doing.
Just whilst we're on that then, so how far are you from the last place?
3 miles.
Those are miles. So the kids are still at the same school and everything?
Yes. Yeah.
Right, smashing. Okay, now back to the archers. Yeah, where were we?
I've completely forgotten because I got distracted by the three small boys running around.
Elizabeth and her
descent. Yes, no. Elizabeth is now doing a very good... She had me fooled completely, actually, when she said, mind you, that's not difficult, when she said, I'm completely fine now, Lily. I feel much more under control. I'm going to cook you breakfast and then you really must go. And then she had the sort of the crack up the second the car left. And but she did put on an incredibly good... a good show. But then people who are having a nervous breakdown often do. People can sort of hold it together for... Mm. I felt very sorry for her. And Lily knows she's not right, but Lily knows that if she wants her relationship to continue, although God knows why, then she's got to go back to Manchester and sort herself out. And, you know, it's just a horrible situation, isn't it?
Do you think she needs... I'm going to stop myself there. I was going to say what she needs is a little bit of a pickup. She needs a little bit of a nifty car in her life. She needs something, doesn't she? But it's not about...
I think it's way beyond that.
No, that's what I was going to say. That's the reason why I stopped myself. Her family need to realise the depths of despair that she's actually in. Though Lily has done her job and she did basically run around and tell the whole family to keep an eye on her. You know, Lily has done her bit, but it's for
If someone says to you, you know, how are you, Elizabeth? Are you coping? How are you feeling? Oh, I'm fine. If someone just keeps saying to you, oh, I'm fine, and you know perfectly well they're not, there's absolutely nothing you can do, really.
Mm. Well, you can, if you know that they're not well. But you know what she needs? She needs a bit of Jill. She needs her mum. She needs a mum just to bowl round there and just go, I'm not leaving Lower Loxley for the next month. I'm going to look after you. I'm going to, you know, make sure that you get up in the morning, you have something to eat whilst you are actually running the place.
Yeah.
Because she's not going to be able, is it Glenn? What's the name of this new chap that's there?
Glenn.
Glyn could actually be running it because Lily's so competent that she could have passed on to him actually the essential stuff that he actually needs to do it. Elizabeth could just be there falling into even more despair, couldn't she?
Yeah.
But then again, no, because the relationship with what was the last manager that she had who we heard for a week?
Oh, yes. I was going to say Anthea, but that's not as Anthea as Matt and Lillian's.
Well, anyway, we know who we're talking about. That actually it's impossible, isn't it? Because there's still executive decisions that need to be made. There's the day-to-day running, which you can get somebody to do. But still, there are going to be those things where he's going to need, you know, some kind of direction. And she's just not capable of doing that.
I did see on the, I don't normally look at the omnibus the synopses. Oh, good. The boys are all now pushing each other really hard near the pond. Excellent.
Wait a minute. You've got like open water on your ground.
No. It's a titchy pond, which
wait
is full
a
of
minute.
Leaves.
Wait
and
a
disgusting.
Minute. Is this like a version of Lower Loxley?
No.
Well, the way the echo there is. It's not some great hall
studio,
that you're in.
Yes, I'm in my baronial hall surrounded by deer heads. It said in I think it's 2 weeks' time or next week? 2 weeks' time, I think it said. It said Elizabeth makes a shock announcement, and I think she's going to say, I can't manage this, and she's going to she's going to hand over control of Lower Loxley to somebody else, which will either be Glyn or it will be Lily coming back again.
Mm. Yep. She needs a mum.
Yeah, she does.
She needs her mum. That's what mums are there for. And the thing is, the rest of the family are dealing with their own mini crises, aren't they? Because there's the price of silage or straw or whatever the heck it is that David's worried about. So, and then there's Kenton and his debts.
I wondered what was happening about that money. Because at one minute it was all anyone was talking about. The next minute, no one mentioned it at all for about a year and a half. And now all of a sudden it's become vitally important once again that the money's returned.
Well, I suppose it's a convenient plot device to have a little bit of needle between the two brothers, isn't it? So it's a case of this money.
Oh, he was getting on my nerves with his bloody decks, silly arse, honestly. God. He's such a knobber. I think because
quite liked it.
Because the rest of the Archer clan are so kind of, you know, mature, and they're not very good at sort of fun, are they? Kind of spontaneous fun. Mm. And Kenton's the only one who kind of does that.
But wait a minute.
Really stands out.
Lucy, didn't you say last week that basically, or was it the week before, that none of the Archers lot actually do fun?
No, I said they weren't funny.
Oh, okay. Right.
Because I said,
Freeman, as you were, go
I
on.
I said Josh was the only one. Mm-hmm. Do I mean Josh or Ben?
Ben. Yeah.
Ben is the only one that's actually funny. He's really, you know, he's sort of amusing. And the others just, they're like a pantomime humour, you know. So Kenton kind of really stands out and looks wildly sort of immature and ridiculous, and, you know, ridiculous. But it's only because he's sort of been put in sort of sharp relief against that lot of sort of po-faced.
I think you've been a little bit harsh there. I think Kenton is funny while put into sharp relief by anybody else in Ambridge. Funny peculiar in that way. but you need it. You need him as a counterpoint. You know, you've got Linda Snell, who's funny, but in a very different way. Whereas Kenton is the court jester, isn't he? He's the village idiot in that regard. Mm. Mm.
He's taken over Nigel's mantle, hasn't he? Because it was always Nigel that would do the stupid, you know, Nigel was had a good sense of sort of fun of being daft or being silly. And the others just can't do being silly.
Mm. And they were knockabout pals 5-6 years, weren't they? When Kenton came back. It was all Kenton and Nigel and whatever. Jennifer settling into her reduced circumstances.
Well, I mean, Brian is being absolutely unspeakable to Kirsty, and poor Jenny's trying to sort of been in here since Thursday, and I've met my new neighbours, and you know, they tell you when bin day is, and they sort of, you say, oh, I hope the dog's not bothering you. Oh no, not at all, da 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 da. And you know, it's all very nice in the beginning, but if you moving into somebody with whom you've already got beef, as my daughter would say, then it's kind of just hideous. And then for Brian to go and stir it up in the way that he did and say Kirsty's filling a vacuum by her sort of community stuff, it's just vile and so horrible. That's the worst thing he could have done for Jennifer, really, you know. Mm. I said last week he didn't help at all with the move. All he did was sort his own sodding books out in his own office that he's kind of pinched from, or he's annexed it from Adam. And, you know, the one thing she wanted him to do, you know, he didn't help in any practical way. And the only thing he has done, the only proactive thing he's done, is really, really piss off their new neighbour when, you know, Jennifer was trying to be nice. You know, I have a lot of fondness for Brian, but I could have strangled him when he did that.
Mm, I hear you. But the interesting thing is that considering that Brian has this court case over his head, he's not obviously displaying any kind of mental anguish, is he? He's, you know, he's doing stuff, but there isn't the odd little sigh every now and then, or a little aside, you know, oh, Jenny, I'm worried about X and Y and Z. He's been remarkably holding it together, considering he's royally screwed his family. They've lost their house, in effect, so they can pay for all this work. They've gone from being the squires of the village to not quite Grundy level, but they're in a tiny little cottage, etc., etc. And he's keeping his pecker up.
Yeah. But that's the, I think it finally, well, you could hear it sort of actually hit him when he got the letter with the court date on.
Mm. Which is actually what made me think, because I'd almost forgotten that he had this thing coming, because he's just...
It's cool. Yeah. Roy, it's called entitlement. You just assume that,
what's that,
you
mean?
Know...
On Black, we don't have none of that. Privilege, we don't have none of that, sweetheart.
I think you just assume that something, that the normal rules don't apply to you, and that somehow something is going to happen that will prevent you ever being actually having to pay the consequences for what you've done.
Mm.
I know I keep going on about this, but when she said she said about Kirsty, she should not talk to her elders, and yes, I'm going to say it, betters, like that. And to just have the idea that some people are better than others because they've got money or social position, it just makes me want to throw up. You know, she's sort of got that off Brian, that kind of sense of, but not us, surely, not us.
Mm. Hear that. When we talked about the main scion of the Archers clan and the fact that, you know, they've got their own little troubles to worry about, there was old Shula, wasn't there, this week? Good old Auntie Shula. There she is, tending to the graves. And just, that's her penance, isn't it?
Yeah.
For just being a bit of a...
She's a bit of a lost soul, really, isn't she, at the moment?
Absolutely.
But she's getting on so much better with Alistair now they've split up. You know, they're really... She's being very supportive of his running and everything. And, you know, I hope she doesn't do what a lot of people do and sort of get back together with him. I mean, that's fine, but in a few years, maybe. Not. She's got to have a bit of time by herself and sort herself out first, but...
Does she need time by herself, or does she need to just throw herself into something? I don't mean a relationship, but like throw herself into some kind of group activity, two or three.
No, that's fine. But I mean, she needs to find out what she wants, because there was this profound sense of discontent. And when Alistair said to her, okay, what do you want? She said, I don't know. So if she doesn't find that, she's just going to get back with him again and then have exactly the same conversation.
I think Alistair had a lucky escape, didn't he? Doesn't want to get back with her. He seems to be really finding himself, you know, so go back there.
I did like Jazza waking him up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he said, I'm going to sleep with a gun under my pillow.
Here's the thing. Do people really have 2 tea bags and 3 sugars in a cup of tea?
I know, that was grim.
We're all Jazza fans, but how much of Jazza, in terms of the characteristics of the character, are actually really plausible? I don't know, you know. You think
he's a caricature?
Some parts I do. There was the whole thing around Fallon's wedding, and I love the fact that he picked her dress. I thought that was really well done, and you remembered that he's actually in love with her and always has been, but he's made peace with that, with the fact that he's in love with her. And then there was the nonsense around what he was wearing, and it just flipped. And I just think we can tone down some of the Jazzerisms. That's
how it started with Linda Snell. She was a total 2D caricature in the beginning, and she was universally loathed. And no one had any sympathy with her until she started being sympathetic to Kate.
Well, and I tell you when I realised that she was great was the way that she had dealt with Kathy after the rape. And Kathy just confided in her.
Yeah.
And then you realise that, you know, she wasn't a gossip, that she was, you know, this great confidant. But how long has Jazza been in it now? 16 years?
Has he? That long? Blimey.
Oh, come on. He has. Because it's going to be at least 15. Because remember, they all went off to the festival. And that was...
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and that's well over 10 years.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I don't know, but it feels like he needs to have his Linda moment. But he's very good at sort of playing off other characters. Like, he plays off Fallon, and we know what his relationship is with Ed. We know what his relationship is with Fallon. We know, but we never have any sense of him on his own. You don't have a storyline that's just about Jazza, do you?
Mm.
It's always someone else's storyline, and Jazza comes in to fix it or whatever.
Yeah. Jazza is never quite the butt of a joke, but there is something implausibly comic. And I don't know. It was just, maybe it's because I'm drinking tea again now. I don't know, Lucy, but 2 tea bags in a mug of tea with 3 sugars. I thought, you know what? I call bullshit. I'm sorry. Just one tea bag too many for me. I thought, no, that's
it. I should write in, Royfield, write in as well. Dear Mr. Davis, dear BBC.
Oh, crumbs, was that a Kerry week last week? It was.
It was.
Oh, God.
Sorry,
you've Kerry.
Cursed us now. Love you.
So, who are the Gills? Are we ever going to see them? And do we
really
care?
Oh, I don't know or care.
Me either, to be honest with you.
Mm-mm.
Right, so we move on from that. You know when we did the live show in Birmingham?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I had somewhat of a long wind-up. And I says, what was the point of Anisha? And to be fair to Kerry, he said, well, they were scuppered by the fact that she just became really popular as an actor. Yeah. And what's the point of Philip? He's hardly ever in it.
You feel like
kind
of saying to people, hang on. Just, can someone, Kerry, just let me know, should I be emotionally invested or not? Is it, you know, do I get that time back?
But Lucy, this is the thing. You can't even be emotionally invested because he's never on it enough.
No.
You know, when was the last time we actually physically heard
He's
Philip?
Kind of had lots of half storylines in that, you know, I thought, oh, is he going to get together with Shula? Because she seemed a bit interested in him. And then that just disappeared.
Well, she was interested in him, not even a bit.
Then the whole storyline just went and disappeared.
And that was great. The fact that he was listening to two ends of the story, wasn't he? You know, that was great. Great positioning, you know.
And then him and Kirsty are kind of fine, but they're quite boring because they just, you know, sit in bird hides and go to the pub. He's either got to have a good story or he's got to clear off, basically.
Yeah,
because like you said, there's not a lot of point to him otherwise.
Yeah, I just reckon just clear off myself. I just think there are enough characters on this docu-soap of which we could explore more, and we don't need some half-assed Welshman who's just in it, what, four times a year, who's actually supposed to be the partner of one of the most beloved characters. If you're going to give her a partner, give her a bloody partner who's actually in it.
Yeah.
Anyway, fuck off, Philip. Right, so...
Back to the valleys with you. And you can take that Natasha with you as well. We don't like her either.
So, gosh, we really have gone through all my notes here. You know what, Lucy, best put a stop to this. And why don't we do some of the caller innerers, because otherwise there's no bloody point in them. Right, so let's have a little bit of this.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
You quite like Monty, don't you?
I do, yes.
All right, then let's have him again then.
Hello, hey. Monty here.
Hello.
What to say about this week's Archers? Well, first of all, Kirsty, God, I can't stand her. I know the Aldridges had a party, but it was a Saturday night. And she wasn't even asleep.
No, it wasn't.
She was just making a fuss for the sake of it. And she didn't come out well from that. I know obviously the script writers tried to make her look better at the end of the episode by with the Grundy's thing, but really she came across as a very small-minded and quite unpleasant person. I could quite sympathise with Brian, and I'm a lefty, so that takes something. Anyway, the Aldridges, obviously making the best of a bad show. I thought their party was quite painful. But entertaining nonetheless. Now Lee and Helen, God, I can't stand them either. It's like fingers down the blackboard. Do you know what? I was surprised that Lee didn't say, Helen, do you know what Spider-Man would have done if he didn't want to see me was this, because that seems to be his one way of getting out of any social thing that he has to deal with. They're a boring couple. They're always going to be a boring couple. I'm sorry, but they are. More karate bollocks. the rest of Ambridge would care is laughable. So it's only natural that people will drop out. Tom's latest farm nonsense. Another playing at farm stuff for him. It's going to end in disaster. Always does. And Elizabeth, she's edging nearer and nearer to the nervous breakdown we all know is going to happen. Looking forward to that. Anyway, take care, everyone. Speak soon. Bye.
I don't think she's edging nearer to it. I think she's in it. But anyway.
Can we have an award for most bitter listener? I mean, I love him. I genuinely love him. But he doesn't like anybody, does he?
Not much, no. Mm.
I agree about Kirsty though. She was ridiculous. She'd already decided that she was going to, that the Aldridge living next door to the Aldridge was going to be a problem, and so she made sure that that party was a problem, even though it wasn't really, was it?
But it wasn't a Saturday night, though, was it? It was actually on a school night, which was, you know, the fundamental problem with it. And also, obviously this whole move has been in the planning for quite some time, because though Kirsty and Brian have never been muckers, but they reminded us a couple of years back that, you know, she's the kind of the eco-warrior, didn't they? You know, she is crusty Kirsty, so she had beef, as your little one would say, with Brian for the last 18 months, you know, to then, you know, play at the fact that then they've become neighbours. So well done plotting that out, script writers. Do you want to go up north?
Yes.
Hiya, Dumpty Dummers. Red Agnes here. I spotted a low-flying Right You Are in an episode before Christmas on a much inferior docudrama set in the Northwest with a knicker factory. Just saying, I was a bit surprised, actually. By the way, the person a couple of weeks ago who said, fuck you, Jenny, oh, that made me laugh. I wanted to say, fuck you, all the Aldridges apart from Brian. If he hadn't buried nuclear waste, there wouldn't have been a farm, there wouldn't have been private education, rutting stags, the Aldridge Millennium Wood, let alone a kitchen that cost more than the GDP of Wales. So, shut your faces, Aldridges, and all the hanger-oners. Oh, on the subject of snobbery, I really like inverted snobbery. Can I say that my granny, who I used to stay with, had a two-up, two-down rented terrace with a vestibule that had an outside bog, a zinc bath, one cold tap and a posser, and we were happy. That's what the North's all about.
Oh, I love a bit of inverted snobbery.
What's a posser? Wow! Oh, listen.
Hello.
A posser, or a washing dolly, was historically a tool used for possing laundry by pumping the posser up and down on the laundry, in the dolly tub, or directly in the copper, or mixing laundry while hand washing it. That's amazing.
I didn't quite understand that. Could you say it more slowly? Then you'll see. No, you were so excited. Right.
Sorry. It's basically a way of hand... Shut up, Basil. Go
Isn't
away.
It a mangle?
It's basic... No, it's like a pumper up and downer that twiddles the laundry around while you're washing it. So you put it in a big tub and then you... wash it up and down, and then it mixes up and cleans it. It's a way of hand washing it. It's called a washing dolly.
So, you know, like...
Possing is an older word than dolly. It means beat down or thrust. There are early 17th century references to linen being possed and to possing tubs.
But, you know, you're like all solidly middle class and proper. You people like the old...
Yes, you are.
And you people like to slightly go backwards. You don't quite trust technology and stuff. And there's kind of an inverted snobbery in terms of having old bits of equipment. So you could, like, you know, big up yourself by getting one of them, couldn't you?
I am not hand-possing laundry just for middle-class credentials.
All right. You know, you watch, right? It's going to become really popular in the next 18 months. You'll be all over it.
I'll be all about the possing, will I?
Exactly. But I do love a bit of Red Agnes, you know. I do love her.
I know, she's ace. I told you, she's Maxine Peake.
Who's Maxine Peake? Remind me.
Maxine Peake is on that court drama, and she was on Dinner Ladies with Victoria Wood. That's where she's got... started. And she's really pretty. She's got blonde hair and she has a really strong accent, a bit like Red Agnes's accent.
All right, here's somebody whose accent is much more neutral than that. It's Glyn, full of love.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Glyn here. As this is my first call in of 2019, and I think we're still just about within the allowed period, may I wish the whole team and all Dumpty Dummers a very happy new year. I think we've just had 2 weeks worth of Kerry Davis scripts, and it always makes a difference, I think, when Kerry is writing. Haven't heard last night's yet, that's Friday night's, and did see something that Kerry was on the Twitters saying that Brian's sentence could be 13 years writing a soap about rural affairs. Well, I don't know what Kerry has done to be sentenced to writing The Archers, but I hope whatever it was bad enough so that he has been sentenced to life to writing this wonderful soap. So, Kerry, please keep up the good work. On The Archers itself, the scene that caught my attention this week was the one between Kirsty and Helen, where, you know, for 5 minutes or whatever, we were treated to a scene where clearly neither of them was listening to the other, which caused, great amusement to me at least. Helen mentioned she felt when she kissed Lee she had lost control. Well, I think 1,000 PhDs could be written on the word control and its meaning in the storyline of Helen Archer stroke Titchener stroke Archer stroke whatever. Okay, thank you to all in Dumpty Dumland. Thank you for keeping this podcast going. And please, like Kerry, keep up the good work. Bye.
Oh, thank you, Glyn. We haven't really spoken about Helen and Lee, have we? We didn't do it last week. That's a big omission last week. Where do you stand on it, Arlis?
Very sort of gentle, and he's the polar opposite of Rob, I think, although people were concerned about this business of his ex refusing to let him see the children. But I don't know whether that was designed to sort of engender sympathy for him from us. You know, what a nice guy, poor chap sort of thing. He does drive me mad, though. I mean, you know, protein and, you know, I like Dan Brown and da, 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 da. He's sort of...
She's just a good salt of the earth bloke. And because he's somewhat uncomplicated, you don't like him.
No, I don't not like him. I just find him a bit dull.
You said.
I think Helen probably needs dull. She's had enough excitement. She's had more excitement than anyone needs ever. Mm. So, you know, if she's happy with dull and he's very nice with Henry. So, you know. Mm. If Rob comes back though, I'm not sure Lee's going to be able to, Lee's not going to be much use apart from he could karate chop him in the knackers, which would be excellent. He's not a sort of an overly macho sort of bloke, which means that Rob would regard him as a pushover. So it might be quite fun to then.
Well, I don't know. I think you've Lee got pushing a somewhat old fashioned view of what being macho is. If someone is a karate teacher and can obviously physically handle themselves, but you don't think they're overly macho. But what I would say, though, is that when you sit down and think about this, and I know I've kind of said it before, but this just kind of brought it out to me again, that apart from the fact that I just want to see or hear much less of Helen on this thing, right, apart from put that to one side, the positioning and the plotting of the character of Helen is masterful because we listen to, 3 years of her being emotionally, physically, and sexually abused. And it was horrendous. It was gripping. It was everything. And I hate to say this, but I can't think of a better word. Post, we don't feel instinctively, oh, great, you go for it. She still irritates us, which you've got to say, amazing writing. Because we...
Bizarrely, I was thinking that exact thought this morning. I was walking through the woods with Baz and I was thinking about, do you remember when Helen was released from prison and they went to
when you said Baz, I was thinking Baz Benning Boy, that horrible
Baz
celebrity.
Baz Benning Boy.
Oh, hate him. hate him. But anyway, go on. Sorry, I just had the picture of you and some black man walking in the woods, loose. But no, you meant your dog.
I was thinking, do you remember when Helen was released from prison, that the BBC filmed me and my friend Rachel and Jenny Murray and various other people listening to the recording?
Mm.
And I when the verdict was announced, I cried very briefly, but I cried. And I was thinking this morning, that is remarkable that I was so invested in Helen that I cried on national television. But I now go, oh, for God's sake, shut up, every every time she says anything.
Absolutely.
And you're exactly right. But just because something shit happens to somebody doesn't make them nicer. It doesn't make them any easier to deal with. And she changed slightly, but maybe not enough.
Mm. It is.
She's less judgmental, but only a bit.
Who was the bag lady that came into things?
Oh, Alison Steadman's character.
Yeah. Well, we can't remember her name, but we know who we're talking about.
The Welsh lady. I've completely forgotten. Alwyn.
There you go. Boom. Well done, Freeman. That all felt odd for me in the fact that Helen didn't like her. Alwyn was horrible, right? But before Alwyn could unfurl her horribleness, Helen was just like, I don't want to hear what you're doing here, blah, 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 blah. Right. And I always thought that was odd because Helen was very much a trusting person, but I suppose it was to show you how much Rob had corroded her.
Absolutely.
So it makes sense that she's incredibly wary around Lee. And I forget which caller in her it was that says that as bored as like, it was Master Miles, wasn't it? He just said, just hurry along and stuff. Oh, no, we haven't had him yet. Fuck. All right. So, sorry, everybody. I tell you what I'll do now. Why don't we just play Master Miles?
Hello, it's Master Miles calling from the frozen tundra of upstate New York. This week on The Archers, we had good angels and bad. Helen and Lee clearly seem destined to fall in love and live happily ever after, which God knows Helen deserves at this point. However, they're dragging this out far too long. If someone befriends you, kisses you, comes back the next day to say they can never see you again, and the next day after that comes to your workplace to say they're not sure what they want, I think that's called emotional manipulation, and Helen really ought to grow up a little and figure out what she feels and act on it. I know she went through a lot with Rob, but that doesn't justify treating Lee as badly as she's been doing. Speaking of treating people badly, Brian has been absolutely awful to Kirsty, and the idea that he didn't mean anything terrible when he slantingly referred to her miscarriage, because what he really meant to refer to was that she had been left at the altar by Tom and had a void in her life, doesn't make any sense, especially considering that she already has a very nice boyfriend now. He's just being made a cartoon ogre, and I don't think it works very well. Fortunately, I don't think Kirsty will have to put up with him for long. It's looking increasingly likely to me that Brian and Jenny will be going back to Home Farm eventually. The mysterious Gills, who aren't moving in but have now trashed the place, don't seem to be a long-term plot point. This is going to be a flash in the pan. I'm starting to wonder whether the Gills are actually the people who dumped all that toxic waste in Loam Mead all those years ago after all. That's my prediction. We'll see what happens. Thanks to everyone at Dumpty Dum. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Now, I tripped myself up by what I said before. Now I can come back. I can circle back. Master Miles, you've been a bit harsh. Whilst I agree, it's somewhat wearisome to listen to their very slow courtship, it's actually incredibly understandable. I think you've been a little bit mean there, sir.
And also, I guess she doesn't, a bit like Tom, who's so dramatically... Well, actually, this is one of those tandem storylines again, isn't it?
Mm.
Tom spectacularly stuffed up his romantic life. First of all, he was unfaithful to Kirsty. Then he was, he was unfaithful to Brenda, was it? And then he...
No, it was Kirsty. It wasn't because he goes off with, whilst he's with Kirsty, he goes off with the supermarket manager.
Oh, that's right. And then it was Brenda and they lived together and then that didn't work out. And then he went back with Kirsty and then he jilted her. But instead of being cautious, he's just gone in like the blooming cavalry, hasn't he? He's gone in with, I've got tattoo. I've met her family. I'm doing blah, 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 blah. I'm taking her advice on the I'm involving her in the future of the farm and all this stuff.
Mm.
Whereas Helen has got the brakes on so hard, she's barely moving. Which is, the two different ways of how you deal with you know, trusting yourself when you sort of go back into dating again.
I think you're very perceptive to see that it's, you know, two storylines running in parallel that we're supposed to compare and contrast as well, because actually as well, Lee, okay, is a little bit dull, but actually he's a stand-up guy, isn't he? He's kind of perfectly boringly normal. And there is absolutely no reason for Helen to mistrust anything that he's done so far. Whereas with Natasha, she's a bit bullshy. She's telling people how to run their farm when she's been doing hair and makeup for X amount of years beforehand, you know, winding up poor Tony up, et cetera, and stuff. So there isn't just the way the two siblings have reacted to these relationships. There's also the partners involved as well. So, well done, you. God, you are clever. Right, shall we go to the Upper Lower East West Side?
Yes.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Yoko Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here, speaking to you from chilly New York City. A couple of times, though, this past week, I thought I was transported back to Ambridge in the 1960s in terms of, first, how one woman presented herself, and then, second, how one woman was treated. First, Helen, ruminating melodramatically about the kiss she and Lee shared in the parking lot, and then concluding that she must nip her relationship with him in the bud. I thought I was listening to a scene from Peyton Place or Splendor in the Grass. Mm-hmm. Upon further reflection, I understood that she's still navigating the emotional fallout of the trauma that was Rob. We keep telling Uncle Carrie that she needs therapy, but does he listen? No. By the end of the week, it looked like Helen had rethought her stance and had opened up her heart a bit and the door to a relationship with Lee. I hope it works out for them, but we know there will be a major bump in the road when he finds out about Helen's history. Next, Brian calling Kirsty one of those joyless feminist eco-warrior types was certainly not one of his finest moments, even though it was in the context of doing something nice for Jenny. It called to mind America's Archie Bunker or Donald Trump, if you'd like. What got to me was that Adam hardly raised his voice in protest of Brian's inappropriate remarks. I expect more from my fellow gay man in that circumstance. But then again, I guess not from Adam. That's all my thoughts for today, except that Elizabeth needs treatment as well, obviously. But I'll leave that to others to discuss. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye with the spoon in the lower west.
I think Adam was still recovering from Alice, Alki Alice, sharing all his kind of intimate life details with everyone within a 2 mile radius, wasn't he? Yeah,
that was funny. That was very funny.
I liked when she said, whoop, no, get off, Chris, I'm fine. get off. Well, it is funny, but it's not going to be funny as it is going to be all very sad soon.
Smashing. Right. You know what, Luce? What? We have got the most tremendous first-time caller in. Now, we've had caller in from all points of the globe, haven't we?
Uh-huh.
No, we haven't. We've never had one from Hawaii.
Hello, it's fellow Dumpty Dummers. Aloha from Hawaii. This is Claire. I'm a first-time caller in, so I'm a bit nervous. I started listening to The Archers probably unwittingly when I was really young. My mum was a big fan and we used to tease her about listening. So this is my comatic comeuppance. I got into it when Phoebe was born and I've listened ever since. So my mum's having the last laugh now. Anyway, just wanted to call in for ages but was a bit nervous about getting in touch. But anyway, just listened to an episode, so it's fresh in my head. Tom and Helen, the lack of awareness and emotional intelligence. So Tom just really doesn't get it, does he? You know, twice in tonight's episode, which is the 9th of January, he completely missed the cues that Johnny fed him about Helen not being herself. And then when he started talking about, oh, yes, another new project again, totally missed Johnny's cues that, oh, I thought I was going to be involved. Mm. And then Helen and Lee, it's heartbreaking. I understand how she feels, but, you know, Helen, come on, he's a great guy and don't cut him off. you know, start with friendship. You never know where it's going to end up. But anyway, there's my tuppence. So just wanted to let you know, love the show. And Lucy and Royfield, you're doing a brilliant job. I love tuning in every week. I love going on the Facebook page. Really feel like I'm part of the community. And really glad I found you guys. So have a good week. Bye.
Thank you. Bye, Claire.
Bye-bye, Claire.
Hawaii. Imagine that. Mm.
Cool. Yeah, imagine what in Hawaii?
Just being there.
Yeah, I am imagining. Exciting. It'd be awesome. Right, Arloose.
Don't start persuading her to invite you over. I think, yeah, she's exactly right. And that is one of the things with Tom is his total lack of emotional intelligence. He just has none. None, 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 none. I don't think Pat has. I think they've inherited, if you can inherit the lack of something from somebody, I think they've inherited the lack of emotional intelligence from Pat. Because that giving away Helen's bracelet to Natasha, she just doesn't, she doesn't get it a lot of the time, and they don't either. And also the way Helen was carrying on, it was, you know, about a kiss. That was all it was, and you know, she really was. It's again, it's quite immature. It's how a sort of a 17-year-old would. You know, oh God, so now I've kissed him, so now I've got to decide, I've got to do something, I've got to either say I'm going out with him or I'm not. Blah, blah. There's no
Lucy,
kind of, just,
Lucy,
just.
Lucy.
What?
Helen's what? Dating life has been a disaster. There was Greg
That's
who
true.
Killed himself.
Yeah.
You know, she mm-hmm. nearly killed mm-hmm. her husband, and that's just off the top yeah. of my head. Then. Come on.
They're just the ones I can think of immediately.
Then there was that bloke who discovered that she'd had had Henry with donor sperm, and he ran a mile.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on now, my initial theory.
Sorry, I just heard that as donut sperm. I've just realised what you said, donor sperm. I was thinking, well, is that like a custard one?
Oh, I tell you, there's an amazing story about the woman who had donor sperm. She in a lesbian relationship, they decided to have a child, so she needed some donor sperm. Had a beautiful daughter. When the daughter was 14, she said, "I'd like to try and find my father." The father had basically said, he'd left on his notes, if father's any children, they can come and find him. So she goes up to Seattle. I forget where they were from, somewhere in California. They go up to Seattle to meet a biological father. In that time, her mother had broken up with her partner, and she fell in love with the guy who was the sperm donor. And he just like some, he had, I don't know, 10, 12 children who were sort him out and whatever. So this old big BBC online story I read last week where she's, you know, so she's now the mother of the child is now with the father, with the sperm donor father, and they're all a big happy family. Only in America. Aww. Only in America.
Yeah.
Where were we? I was wittering on. So yeah, so he scarpered, right? So it's difficult not in real time to go, fucking hell, this is just like so tedious. And it did feel incredibly teenage. You're completely right. Her and Kirsty having that conversation felt yeah. like teenage girls. And I was slightly surprised that Kirsty kind of went along with it the way that she did. You'd think she'd be a bit being like, come on now, Helen, blah, blah, blah. But she knows what she's been through.
Mm, yeah.
You know, I wouldn't, you know, if I was a bloke in Ambridge and my mate, you know, said, oh, you know, I quite fancy that Helen Archer, I'd be like, you know, give it a year or two. You know, she's a fragile person, isn't she?
Mm.
And I think that, and the whole thing about going to France was to play up the fact that she doesn't quite have that social confidence, but she's rediscovering it, that she didn't want to go by it.
Yeah.
She didn't want to go. Then it was a case of, she'll go with somebody, she'll go with her dad, it's going to be great. And then she managed to just about go by herself. You know, I don't want any more Helen Archer. I say that all the time. But in this regard, if we're going to have her on our radio, I think, come on, people, be a bit reasonable.
And next, who have we got? Oh, Quilted Bunny's next.
Ooh, all right, then.
Evening. Quilted Bunny here.
Evening.
With not one but two plot predictions and a factoid. So, number one, I reckon that Toby will find himself a new girlfriend, which will cause friction between him and Pip regarding his ability to pull his weight concerning the care of Rosie. Now, whether Uncle Lex is bright enough to get in there is another matter. Number two is slightly more serious. Something will happen at the Young Offenders which will result in Freddie losing some of his remission, and he won't be tagged and back in Ambridge by the end of March, and Lizzie and Lily will go into meltdown when they're informed that Freddie has been placed on suicide watch. And a little factoid, people have been querying where the audience for Canterbury Tales was coming from. But Kerry Davis tweeted just this morning that Ambridge has a population of 800, which was more than I ever thought it was. So perhaps Grange, Spinney and Clevelands and all these places are bigger and more densely populated than ever we thought. So that's something to bear in mind. Keep up the good work and bye.
Bye.
Nice to hear from you, Quilted Bunny. Oh. Let's enough of that, sir. Just on this Ambridge having 800 people, I've stared at that map of Ambridge for hours on end. There is no human way that place is home to 800 souls. It's just not. Unless you're counting the sheep.
24 people live in Ambridge in my head. That's it.
Yes, there are the buttons, and yes, there are the various silos. But when you look at that map, that's not 800 people, unless they are taking in the surrounding villages. That's the only way that makes any form of sense. Mm. I call bullshit on that, Mr. Davis.
Woo!
No, listen.
You're a brave man.
You know me. I'm a mapaholic. You know. I know how demographics work and all this.
Maybe
kind of
there's
stuff.
A traveller's camp around the corner that we don't know about. You know, Jenny, just past the traveller's encampment. Yes, Brian. Yes.
But anyway, thank you for calling in, Quilted Bunny. Isn't that the first time that he's called?
By the way, Quilted Bunny, I completely agree with you about the Toby's new girlfriend thing. Because the fact that when he said where's Toby? Why isn't he looking after the baby today? And Pip said, oh, because he's doing something. Oh, I can't remember, something to do with his botanicals. And I thought, botanicals, my ass. I thought, girlfriend, that's what that is.
Anyway, right now, let's take three or four. Come back to the other side. With a touch of the old yokels.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, it's Yokel Bear here calling with the social media roundup for the week. And we started the week in Ambridge with a plot line of real horror, real horror, when we found out that Jenny was going to have to give away one of her tagines. Oh, the horror. Oh, the humanity. But this prompted me on Facebook, in the spirit of the confessional, to confess that I don't own a single tagine, and never have. Well, it turns out I'm not alone. A lot of people said they didn't have one. In fact, Ruth Pearl said, my confession is even worse. I had to Google the word. Whereas Sue Hankins said, well, I'm coming out of the closet. I have a tagine and I have used it, not for ages, but winter's coming. Sue then also lists a lot of other kitchen appliances that she has, and she's got quite a lot of good ones. Want to see a good kitchen? Forget Jenny. Get down to Sue's. Jane Woodhouse went a bit eBay and said, I think I know someone who has one spare. It's quite jazzy, mind you. Jane, I'm not sure what a jazzy tagine would look like. How do you jazz up a tagine? The mind boggles. Whereas Rona Humphreys says tagine equals waste of oven space, but then did note that, of course, Jenny used to have a double oven. She hasn't any more, though, has she? Also, we had a great post from Stephen Botley, who said, if you don't own a single one, you must have a pair. The world is divided into those who possess merely a single tagine, wishing secretly for two, or those that feel a sense of guilt and sadness for those who only own one. Stephen also finished his post by saying, whatever next, maybe you will claim you only have a one temperature kettle. Stephen, I do. Oh, God, my life's so terrible. We also spoke about Elizabeth and her kind of... She seemed to rally a little bit, didn't she? But then obviously, she broke down again. And we asked you kind of how you were feeling about it. And this led to what I can only describe as the most disturbing post that we've had from somebody this week. Step forward, Mark Catchpole, who in just two sentences, I think just... took all the joy out of the world when he said she shagged Russ, that's why he was in the shower. Oh God, please don't make me think about this, Mark. Oh God. Saying that though, it has been a bit of a theory on social media that this is where this is heading, and that, you know, Russ seems to like being kept, and well, maybe Lizzie's got more access to money. I don't know. I hope not. I really hope not. However, a lot of people did have sympathy for Lizzie. Andrew Horn, our very own Andrew Horn, said her rallying lasted as long as some people's New Year's resolution. But seriously, Andrew thinks her motivation came from the right place. And Anne Lydon thought the same. She said when she said, I think she was doing the right thing as a parent, though Anne did say that she would have probably have poisoned Russ with some slow-acting but fatal drug before they left. Yeah, Anne, we don't condone murder on Dumpty Dum. Well, not always.
I do.
And only some people. Anyway. But, of course, there was also a party in Ambridge this week where the wine couldn't quite fit on the kitchen counter, which is so small. Brian put on Now That's What I Call the 60s, Volume 12. And we asked the question, was Kirsty in the right? Were Jenny and Brian being a bit rude, having a weekday party with lots of noise? And I was kind of erring on the side. I was definitely Team Kirsty, having once had really noisy neighbours. But a lot of people disagreed. Gail Parra says, nope, she's the kind of neighbour who complains you're parked in my spot when it's a public road. Mm. She doesn't own the place and she needs to learn to share. Laura Jo said, they sounded a bit loud, but it's not like Kirsty was trying to sleep yet. So she might have been a little bit premature in our rant. Martin van der Heuvel said, it was as if I was listening to an episode of Corrie in the 60s and 70s. Elsie and Hilda yelling at each other through a thin wall. Yeah, I think that might be true. Whereas Geeta Beecroft said, who are these people who throw parties at the drop of a hat? Anyway, the thought fills me with horror. My kitchen was built as a space to accommodate parties. Number of parties I've had there in 3 years, zero. Yeah, I'm with you, Geeta. I'm one of those people that I wouldn't have a party. And if I did, I'd probably put up that bunting that says, please leave by 9. Sorry to mention bunting. I know it's still a sore spot for everyone. However, Pete Ransom was definitely Team Kirsty when he said, agreed. Can you imagine a bunch of toffs moving in next door and then having a shindig when you're trying to get some rest? And that eco-feminist warrior line was just rude. Definitely Team Kirsty. And Pan Crookshank said, stupid to have rented it in the first place. Isn't Blossom Hill still vacant? Now, we had a bit of a clarification on Twitter this week from the Lord Emperor Kerry Davis of The Script, who said that Blossom Hill isn't vacant, but it's currently being inhabited by silent characters. I don't know whether that's just people that don't say anything on the Archers or a monastic order of silent monks. I don't know. Could go either way, couldn't it? Also, for those of you that were listening to the Canterbury Dales, which I finally got round to listening to and thought, actually, do you know, I quite enjoyed it. I'm not a Chaucer fan, but I really did quite enjoy it. We asked who told the best tale, and from the comments that we had, Kirsty won the tales, with Jim Lloyd coming a very close second. So just so you know who won. And finally, we had a bit of a discussion this week about, because it was quite a lot of farming and agricultural talk in a couple of episodes this week, and we wondered how people feel about the agricultural side of the show. Is it an essential part of it, or is it a distraction from the plots? And yes, what your thoughts were.
Bloody farmers.
But overwhelmingly, people really liked the agricultural stuff, as long as it's not too much. Glyn Fuller Love said, it's part of the Archer's DNA. More farming, less Hannah, please. Luke Hannington said, I like the Archers best when nothing really happens, just variously accented people discussing cattle with the flour and produce and Christmas show thrown in as annual treats. And Jean Bell said, I have very limited agricultural knowledge, confined to small old-fashioned farming in the New Forest when I was young. I really enjoy all the references to farming in the programme, and to be honest, I wish there were more. And Nancy Jane Morn said, I love the farming conversation because it's the bread and butter of the Archers. And it is really, isn't it? It's a tale of farmers and farming community. And, you know, I think that's really good. Peter Mabbott also said, it's essential and a pleasant distraction from any soap opera tropes. Yeah, and I do love it. I absolutely love it as well. I was kind of brought up a little bit in the country. In my early life, I was from a fairly rural community. And so kind of, you know, I think it's been part of the show. It's like the backbone of the show, isn't it? And so that's it. That's the social media roundup for the week. So quite a lot we covered there, really. Everything from tagines to agriculture, and parties with really bad 60s music. I like a bit of 60s, but God, Brian, get some better music taste. So that's me done for the week. You'll have the pleasure of Millie Bell next week. But from me, it's goodbye.
Luce. By the way, well done, Yokuba. That was awesome. Thank you, sir. Right. Now, whilst we were listening to Yokel Bear, and I know you know this because I WhatsApped it to you, I've just downloaded the map of Ambridge, right? I'm like a dog with a bone on this one, right? I've counted approximately 50 buildings, right? Bearing in mind that the stables has 3, right? Brookfield Farm has 4, right? No, 5, 6, 7, right? Now, if there's 800 people and there's approximately 50 buildings, let's say that all of the farm buildings inhabit human beings. That is on average 16 people per dwelling in Ambridge.
Maybe they're all houses of multiple occupation.
You know, I'm looking at this and there are places that don't get mentioned anymore. Ambridge Farm. When's the last time we heard of Ambridge? Anybody, anything going on down at Ambridge Farm, right? There's 4 buildings there. Right. Maybe there's a whole load of asylum seekers holed up in St. Stephen's Church. You know, UKIP want to get round there and start, you know, start getting them all thrown out of the country or something. Utter rubbish. I'm sorry. Anyway, give some tweets. I need to exit out of this show. Too sweet. Chop, chop. Come on.
Sweary Jen Aldridge. Oh, Philip is back. I don't like him. He smells of cheese. David from Barnet. What's that you say, lassie? There's a problem with the old silage clamp. I don't know why I went Australian, because I was thinking of that bloody kangaroo, Skippy. Bob Hawkins. Kenton will be 12 on his next birthday. Dichotomy. I'm not in the mood for any kind of fuss, says the woman, having a meltdown, having been reduced to one tagine. Hashtag oh the horror. Alison. Tom's new online venture is to be entitled Hello Sausage. And John Reed, tweet of the week. Alan, hello, Shula. Where are you off to with those coconut halves? Shula, fucking hell, Alan, you still in this?
I'll tell you what, right, Luce. Right, if you're a long-time listener to The Archers, looking at this map does enough take you down a trip down memory lane, and that should be a name of one of the roads there, because the police house. When's the last time we actually heard of somebody talking about the police house? Wasn't that where Christine and George Barford retired to? I'm just guessing.
Didn't it burn down? Something didn't... Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah, and whoever...
I'm no god on my history. I can barely keep up with current events, never mind history.
Arkwright Hall doesn't get mentioned anymore. Yeah.
Well, that's derelict, isn't it?
Is it? So there's even less for these mythical people.
Wasn't somebody going to buy it and do it up? Why do I think that Adam and somebody was going to buy it and turn it into something?
Mm.
I don't know.
But no, it's all here. It's Bull Farmhouse. No, I don't remember that. But there are farms galore here. Anyway, stop looking at the map, Royfield. It's time for us to start to wrap this up and to say thank you to the people who've started buying things on dumdydum.com on our shop. Though, what we need you to do, if you are purchasing stuff from us, is to take a picture of yourself with your mug or in your t-shirt, in your hoodie. And somebody even bought a backpack today, Lucy, and a tote bag.
Good.
Yeah. Take a picture of you with your swag and whack it onto social media, because that's just like quite a nice thing to do. And it's really nice to see you in your dum-de-dum attire, and we thank you for helping to support our wonderful enterprise by purchasing things from our shop. Quite simply, if you go to dumdydum.com, go into the menu, hit shop, it will take you to the shop. Then what you do is you buy some stuff, and then you get your credit card out, and then it verifies it, and then all of a sudden the stuff comes to you, and then everything's all right with the world. So dumdydum.com, go there, it's got a shop. It's also got a forum as well, so you can go there and talk about Archer stuff, or you can even play the Right You Are quiz, which I know has had a whole load of
I have to do the email from my
pattern. As soon as I said that, then I remembered that too.
Yes,
go.
Message from Mike Hatton. Hello, you three. Not sure who's doing the podcast this week. Can you give a plug for the Right You Are Hello You Two quiz on the next podcast, please? That's what I'm doing, Mike. We've had 8 sets of answers sent in on the comment form or by email to writeyouare1951@gmail.com. I think others have listened and played along and chosen not to send in their answers. The leader is somebody called Lucy, hurrah, who scored 22. It wasn't me, who scored 22 and then amended a couple of her names and increased her score to 23. There is one voice remaining that no one has yet managed to identify correctly. If no one manages to get 24 out of 24, I will post the answers at the end of January. Thank you to everybody for the nice compliments about the quiz. I am ready to start compiling one for next year, although Hello You Twos and Right You Ares are somewhat thin on the ground so far in 2019.
Mm, sorry.
Let me give that email address again. Once you've done the quiz, you send your answers to Mike at writeyouare1951@gmail.com, or you can send them in on the comment form.
Yes. I'm just looking at all the comments that you've got from your photo of your new studio. Goodness. Mm-hmm. And isn't you're saying, oh, do you think people would like to see this, Royfield? I really don't know. You and your faux bloody modesty. Anyway, it's lovely. And yes, Basil does look like a meerkat, whoever the heck said
he does.
That. Well spotted. Yes, great comment, sir. Where are you? Martin McEverly. Yeah, well done. So dumdydum.com, we've done that. Oh, patreon.com. So if you don't want to go onto our shop and go and purchase some swag, some wares, some bit of homeware. We've got it all there. You can go to patreon.com, spend a princely sum of $2 per show, and you get extra content when somebody from the Archers wants to be interviewed by me, and there's other things besides that. So go and do that. Go to patreon.com and give us $2 per show to help keep us in, as Robert would say, gold-plated microphones.
Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe or on the website, or you can call 0203-031-3105 to leave us a message.
And on social media, you can find myself, Royfield, and our Lucy at DumDeeDum. And Lucy's at?
Lucy V. Freeman.
And I can be found quite simply at Royfield. And very soon we will have the debut of our wonderful Kerry Warbis, who can be found at Kerry Warbis. And of course our Robart is at Naked Fingers. On Facebook, you can go and join the Millie Bell, Yokel Bear and Witherspoon show by simply typing in DumDeeDum on that social media platform. Right, Arloose, that's just about it from me. You got any newspaper headlines you want to read out?
I haven't, not today, I'm afraid.
Oh.
It was all a bit Brexity. And I don't think anyone needs any more of that, do they?
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.